In this edition of Clinical Review, I'd like to discuss the importance of dietary supplements and why I refer to the use of natural health products as the intelligent choice. Although it's assumed by countless individuals that they get everything they need from food alone without supplements, no study has ever confirmed this notion, at least with respect to standards needed to achieve optimum health and prevent the premature degeneration of the mind and body, or prevent the disability we can all see in the geriatric population. Need, quote unquote, is generally confined to the prevention of classical disease, such as scurvy or pellagra, as opposed to enhancing quality of life, optimizing energy balance, attaining ideal body composition, or maximizing peak physical performance. Therefore, when someone says, I get everything I need from food, in the context of classical disease, they may be right. However, how many times have you heard someone say that they get everything they need in food? Yet it's obvious by looking at their skin and overall body appearance and body composition that they are definitely lacking in some or many of the basic ingredients. Yes, it's true they don't appear to be dying from scurvy or going blind due to a deficiency of retinol, which is vitamin A. Although in the context of time as a continuum, that perception may or may not be true in the absolute sense. But it still doesn't mean they are truly well. Wellness is defined by much more than not suffering from scurvy, keeping in mind that health is the presence of function, which can be measured and compared to an optimum or suboptimal standard, whichever you prefer. Well, I can tell you this for sure. I've never seen anyone come close to receiving optimum amounts of essential micronutrients from food alone, day in and day out, long term, and this is based on extensive evaluation of thousands of dietary profiles. And yes, this includes people who eat health foods, including organics, and are training. Remember, optimum is the highest possible level that you as an individual can achieve, as opposed to the lowest, instead of creating reference standards that make the weak, tired, and overweight look okay. I prefer to use standards that make the strong, high energy, lean, and muscular look normal. If you put your mind to it and spend some time in research, you'll find literally hundreds of surveys and clinical investigative studies performed in dozens of countries by specialists in complementary medicine that prove that our population is suffering because of simple dietary deficiencies that cause malnutrition, including suboptimal intakes of trace elements and insufficient quantities of omega-3 fatty acids, vitamins, minerals, and amino acids. The correlation between this reality and the high incidence of degenerative disease is undeniable. In my experience as a clinician and health consultant concerned about optimizing form and function and preserving life, seldom have I seen anyone come close to achieving an excellent dietary profile. Most people find the discipline associated with eating well an incredible challenge, and for most athletes committed to sport and exercise, their diet is by far their weakest link. Why? Because it's easier to train than to eat with the same devotion and discipline. By analyzing literally thousands of diets presented by athletes and men and women troubled by health concerns or people who want more than baseline health, who want to feel and look good, I have yet to find anyone not lacking in at least one or several of the essential micronutrients, especially the minerals. And of course, mineral nutrition is just one of several variables related to diet that influence our health and function and resistance to disease. Once you get into things like glycemic indexing, the biological value of protein, water consumption, prescription drug use, omega-3 and 6 ratios, or the concept of acid and alkaline balance, it not only gets much more complicated, but also really obvious that we, as in the majority of the population, are incredibly off track when it comes to eating correctly. How many of us actually know how much selenium or zinc we have obtained in any given day or week? How many of us know where selenium is found or what zinc even does? You can get an almanac and calculate an estimate, but this standard doesn't take into account where your food came from, how it was prepared, how well you digested it, the state of your gastrointestinal health, or metabolic uniqueness. Suffice it to say that each person is genetically unique and therefore requires different quantities of the same nutrients to function in a state of wellness. That family bowl thing might have worked for some members of your family, but for others it leads to crippling disability and immune system impairment, because for certain individuals, the family bowl just can't supply their biochemical needs. By family bowl, I mean the foods that families are raised on, that all the siblings are consuming, and so we're getting the same exposure to the same kinds of foods as we grow up, and definitely some of those siblings or parents are getting what they require, but others are not, and so that's what I mean by the family bowl. Now, Dr. Abram Hoffer came out with a vitamin dependency model, and he said that no amount of food could supply what the body required, and this is what he called a vitamin dependency. From the viewpoint of genetics, imagine the possibility that some individuals require specific amounts of magnesium, for example, which is beyond what any diet could supply, but is required to catalyze a specific enzyme essential to the production of any number of organic metabolites. Without sufficient magnesium, these individuals cannot fulfill the equation of life and energy. And so I ask you, why is this notion so hard to accept? What if much of the heart disease, cancer, diabetes, mental illness, and defects in thyroid function we see in North America are actually caused by insufficient micronutrient supply as opposed to a germ, virus, or bacteria? Or maybe due to incomplete nourishment, exposure to immunization, and antibiotics as children, we're simply set up for chronic illness. Dr. Hoffer is a giant in the orthomolecular medical field and someone I truly admire. I have met with him personally, followed his work for decades, subscribed to the Journal of Orthomolecular Medicine, which he edits, and have read most of his books on nutrition and mental health. In fact, he is recognized as a pioneer in complementary medicine and was honored by the Canadian Health Food Association by being inaugurated into their Hall of Fame. In essence, most of us assume the nutrients we need are present in our food to the same degree as the text references provided. But I think this is wishful thinking and definitely not true. Variance in micronutrient density in food obtained from different regions of the world is a scientific given. And without actual chemical analysis, it's impossible to know for sure what's actually in food. In other words, you can't tell by looking at a tomato if it contains any chromium, molybdenum, or vanadium. How can our food base possibly sustain us with everything we need if the soil upon which it is grown is infertile, eroded, and stripped through years of forced mass production? Without selenium or chromium in the soil, there won't be any selenium or chromium in the asparagus or spinach grown on that particular soil. Plants and people can't create minerals out of thin air. In Diet and Disease, Dr. Emmanuel Taraskin, MD, provides several examples of how the micronutrient content of a food can vary. We all know that food loses its intrinsic value when it is processed and reconstituted, such as when you convert a raw potato to a bag of chips. But just the potato itself, in a natural raw state, can vary tremendously in mineral and vitamin content. Dr. Taraskin refers to the micronutrient value of 200 common natural foods, all of which varied tremendously depending on where they were grown or raised, their age, exposure to light, heat, and oxygen, methods of growth, packaging, processing, and soil fertility. The preparation and cooking of even the freshest organic food further reduces its potential to nourish our bodies. Without a reliable food supply and based on the current science of nutritional pharmacology, it makes perfect sense to supplement the diet. Getting everything I need from food alone is possible, but only in the context of achieving the lowest possible standards of life, as opposed to the highest level of health and athletic performance. Even the very best food choices cannot compete with what vitamin C, E, and lipoic acid and the electrons they donate to neutralize free radicals can achieve against sick building syndrome, smog, secondhand smoke, and the chemical toxicants in the water supply. Many people assume they don't need to take anything unless they're sick, but that very assumption is what limits their ability to maintain or achieve the best of health or better their performance or both, especially as master level athletes. It also denies one of the most important tenets of biological medicine, which emphasizes the prevention of illness, infection, and disease through sound nutrition and added antioxidant protection. The idea is not to passively wait for disease to strike. The key is to take action and control the outcome of your life and health. Here are three examples of how food, no matter how good, simply cannot compete with the effects of dietary supplements. A 1991 study conducted at the USDA Human Nutrition Research Center on Aging at Tufts University found striking differences in ocular levels of vitamin C among older adults who consumed 148 milligrams of vitamin C daily from diet alone compared to adults who took 2,000 milligrams daily from supplements in addition to the same diet. The level of vitamin C in the focusing lens and aqueous fluid of the eye increased 22 to 32% in those consuming the supplement, and this level of ascorbate is known to protect against cataracts. This research also dispels the myth that vitamin C levels reach a saturation point at about 240 milligrams in the blood serum, and that additional vitamin C is worthless and simply washes out in so-called expensive urine. And this article was by B. Sardi in the Townsend Letter. The article title is called, "Is High-Dose Vitamin C Risky?" This is number 213, page 112 to 113. In 1992, Montalone's group in Italy reported on a double-blind, placebo-controlled trial of young, healthy men subjected to exercise-induced stress. For 10 days, these young men took 800 milligrams of phosphatidylserine prior to their session of bicycling to near exhaustion. Phosphatidylserine, or PS, lowered cholesterol production by nearly 30% compared to diet alone, indicating that PS can soften the severity of stress response in young, healthy people under stress. And this article was called "Phosphatidylserine, a Keats Good Health Guide," page 27 to 28. It was written by Dr. Paris Kidd in 1998. Here's another study. Smith et al., 1998, compared the effects of creatine supplementation in young, under 40 years of age, and middle-aged, over 50 years of age, male and female subjects. In a single-blind manner, subjects ingested placebo followed by creatine, about 20 grams per day for 5 days, about 100 grams total. And prior to each treatment, subjects performed an isotonic exercise protocol consisting of three leg extension sets. The first two sets were 2 minutes in duration at a rate of 37 contractions per second. The last set was performed at the same rate to exhaustion. Muscle phosphocreatine was measured at rest and during exercise. Creatine ingestion significantly increased resting and recovery phosphocreatine in both young and middle-aged subjects. For all subjects, time to exhaustion in the third set increased by 30% after creatine supplementation was taken. And this article was written by Dr. Williams, PhD, 1999. Creatine, the power supplement, ergogenic effects of creatine supplementation on anaerobic endurance, page 136 to 137. The discovery of many vitamins in the last century resulted from the investigation of food and how it was consumed regionally and culturally. All foods possess limitations, and an incomplete diet causes symptoms of disease and even death. The quest for survival has always been connected with the acquisition of the correct type and amount of food. Dietary supplements guarantee a minimal or optimal quantity of micronutrients essential to our practical and functional requirements, depending on their potency, form, and quality. When livestock are raised, additional quantities of nutrients are added to their feed. Why? Because fortified food protects animals against deficiency, increases production yield, and reduces profit loss due to infection and stress. This is scientific fact, and yet, when it comes to the human animal, dietitians and medical experts somehow perceive that we are exempt from the same laws of cause and effect. Hell, our budgies at home eat better than we do, yet all the animal care experts still recommend extra vitamins in addition to their perfect diet of millet and raw seeds and routine exercise. And our budgies don't drink coffee, snack on junk food, or sit around for hours watching television. Although many dietitians and physicians have publicly denounced the consumption of megavitamin therapy and even go as far as saying the practice is unsound, involves great risk, and is a definite waste of time and money, surveys performed by their own associations and printed in peer-reviewed orthodox journals show that up to 60% of them take supplements for stress management and prevention of infection. Cardiologists seldom advocate CoQ10, vitamin E, or lycopene for reducing the risk of vascular disease, but two-thirds of them take antioxidants because they can't refute the science. By the way, you don't have to believe in dietary supplements to benefit from them any more than you have to believe in the force of gravity to be affected by it. Belief in anything, no matter how great the pressure from people around you, does not necessitate or imply in itself actual truth. And more often than not, in the realm of nutrition, most people rely on what they've heard rather than what they've actually studied. Well, that's it for this segment of SNU. Thanks for listening. And here's a quote from Nobel Prize laureate and physicist Enrico Fermi. Whatever nature has in store for mankind, unpleasant as it may be, men must accept, for ignorance is never better than knowledge.